Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to today's program of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes, and I'm also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network, and we are so excited that you have joined us today. If this is your first time to catch a podcast, a broadcast, a live performance of one of our shows, congratulations. We believe you have found one of tennis' best-kept secrets. We try every week to bring you at least three interviews on air of tennis personalities that you or one of your friends may have heard of, but you're not quite sure who they are, where they are. These are personalities that the Tennis Channel, ESPN, CBS, USA, whoever else is covering tennis out there just doesn't have time to tell you about. But we devote an hour a week to finding these great stories and telling you about them. And I am a former collegiate tennis coach, 20 years. Spent most of my time at the community college level until 2011. And since then, I have been on the radio talking to college tennis coaches about their programs and various other people that are connected to the college tennis world. And as many of you know, during the summertime, what we try to do is catch up with the previous year's national champions, and that is what we're going to do today. We're going to have Coach Derek Racine in here. Derek is the Division II men's national champion from the University of West Florida, and this is not his first time to win a national championship. It will be, I believe it's his first time to be on the show. And so we're going to talk about his experience and what's been going on out there at West Florida. He runs an outstanding program and is a very small college-minded coach. And we're going to pick his brain and see what happened out there at West Florida and how this season came about to end with the national championship. And before we bring Derek in, I just want to go over a couple of news items out there. There's not a lot going on in the college tennis world. As many of you know, we talk about this each week. This is summer camp time. A lot of college coaches through my contacts, Facebook and otherwise, are out there conducting themselves on the tennis courts, entertaining thousands of kids across America, giving them a great tennis experience, trying to motivate them to pursue a great lifetime sport and pursue it on to college, hopefully maybe one day ending up with a recruit that came across their tennis camp. And in the meantime, making sure that lots of smiles are had, lots of games are played, and that the moms and dads are excited to pick them up because the kids are worn out for the rest of the day. And as I remember when I was a college coach, that was one of the best compliments I received from the parents was, is my kid goes home and doesn't do anything but sleep the rest of the day. And I thought that was, being a parent myself, that was a great compliment as to what we were doing at the tennis camps. So, and my hat's off to those college coaches. You know, we don't really take a break. We like to think that the summer's a little downtime, but not necessarily the case with these tennis camps. And then we're into July, almost halfway through July, as a matter of fact, as of today. And that means that a lot of these college coaches are gearing up for the start of the 2014 fall season. And so we're excited about that and looking forward to the upcoming year. presents a very challenging year for college tennis this 2014-2015 season on the Division I level. A very exciting year for the small colleges. Now, wanted to talk just another little something out there that I have discovered here, you know, and may have been watching some of this on TV. The Milan World Team Tennis has been happening, and if you'll notice on these rosters, lots of college tennis players playing out there for 30 minutes and giving their teams a chance to win. I'm kind of in between on the World Team Tennis here. I understand that it has its own place. I don't really get the whole idea here. We're playing a season in roughly about 4 weeks. These tennis players are playing 3 to 4 matches a week. They're not really playing matches. They're playing on time. There's a circus-type atmosphere, which is good. The courts are different colors. I don't quite get that. We're only playing singles, then singles for a short period of time, and doubles for a short period of time, and then we've got overtime and mixed doubles, and you know, it just seems like a whole lot of a circus act going on out there trying to get tennis on TV in the summer. And my hats off to Billie Jean King here, who developed this program. I mean, she's created an interest, but I honestly can say I'm not interested in it. I don't watch it. I think it's not that fun for me to watch, and I'm looking at the rosters here on some of these teams, and I can say that not a lot of people seem to be enjoying it if you're a professional player, because there aren't a lot of big names that are playing World Team Tennis. So, but anyway, my deal here is to talk about college tennis, and so we do that, and just want to let you know that college tennis is being well represented at the World Team Tennis level, and at the Austin Aces level. Treat Huey, John Patrick Smith, Treat played at Virginia, John Patrick Smith at Tennessee. The Lobsters, they've got John Isner, one of the great American college success stories. Eric Buderak, who is a great American college success story. We don't hear a lot of the USTA out there promoting him. However, the small college people, I think we're very proud of the fact that Buderak is out there from Gustavus Adolphus. And then we've got Megan Moulton-Levy, William and Mary, Caitlin Wariski from Tennessee. They're playing on the Boston Lobsters as well. The Philadelphia Freedoms, they don't have anyone that played college tennis on their team. The Aviators, another great successful tennis story here. Bob Bryan, Mike Bryan, maybe you've heard of them. Somdev Devarman played at Virginia. The Lasers in Springfield, they've got James Blake. Perhaps you've heard of him, another great college success story. Jean-Julien Roher, UCLA, and Mike Russell, another college tennis success story out of Miami. The Texas Wild, located in Dallas, again, no college tennis players. And then we finish off here with the Washington Castles. We have Kevin Anderson out of Illinois, one of the top 20-ranked men in the U.S. In the world. No, he's not from the U.S. He's from South Africa. And then also Bobby Reynolds from Vanderbilt playing there as well. So college tennis is getting its kind of its game on, World Team Tennis. And also the summer circuit, we don't want to not talk about it much, or talk about it just a little bit here. It is going on currently, and this weekend there were 9 sites that hosted this last weekend all across the U.S., and it's a great summer event for these college tennis players, for even juniors. As long as you're a member of the ITA, you can play in these events. And to get these college tennis players together in a tournament-type atmosphere really gives them something to do. The college coaches I know out there can tell their players, listen, you need to be at least playing 1 or 2 of these a summer to keep your game up. And so it's good to see that these tournament draws are active, and then also want to remind you that these all accumulate towards a great big championship that are held at the end of the summer circuit season, and then those summer circuit season winners actually get to, I believe they're given a wild card or given a chance to play for a wild card over there at the USTA big tournament at the end of the summer. Maybe you've heard of it, the U.S. Open. So, this is a good deal. The ITA, the USTA working together to get more college tennis promoted is always good. So we're going to keep up with that and see how those things go. Now, I've got, I believe I've got Coach Racine on the phone here. I've got two numbers, and I know one's probably listening in today, and the other is Coach Racine. So I'm going to take a guess here and see if I get this one right. And if I don't, well, then we'll go to the other one real quickly here. So let me see if I've got Coach Racine on the phone. Well, Derek, are you there?
Hello? Yes, I am.
Is this Derek? Yeah, oh, very good. Well,
yes,
I guess
yes,
correctly.
It is.
Very good. Now, I got two numbers here, and I always, when that happens, I think somebody is listening in, and that's fine. We'll go to hit that person later in the show and see if they've got a question. I want to remind people that it is a live show, so you can call in at 714-583-6853. Derek, so excited to have you on the show today. Thanks for coming in.
Well, I appreciate it. It's great to be on, and I look forward to it.
Yeah, now, Derek, I know who you are. I've been a big fan of yours, small college fan of yours, for years and years. But I'm going to hate to tell you this, Derek. There are going to be a lot of my listeners that don't have no idea who you are or where you're at. So if you would just spend some time here quickly introducing yourself, give us a quick biography, and let's move from there.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in Pensacola who don't know who I am, so that's okay. I'm the coach at the University of West Florida. We're a larger, I would say, Division II school. We have 13,000 students. I've been at West Florida. This was just finished my 16th season. We sit in Pensacola, Florida, which is right on the top of the panhandle, right on the panhandle on the Gulf of Mexico. Beautiful, some of the beautifulest, the most beautiful beaches in the whole U.S. It's really paradise to live there, and I'm very fortunate to be able to live there and work there, and something that I really enjoy. But UWF, as we call it, came a long way in the last 2 years. We were an NAIA institution. I think we changed to Division II about 17 years ago, just the year before before I came there. And they had very strong tennis programs when I was there. I was very lucky to inherit programs from Coach Skeeter Carson, who was a longtime coach there. He was actually there for 17 years at UWF before I got there. So we've had a good tradition of tennis there, and just two coaches that have kind of brought the program along. So it's just an exciting place to be.
Well, Derek, now, as we go through this, we're going to talk about the school a little bit. We're going to talk about you, and we're going to talk about that great national championship run that you got to participate in this year with your men's team. I want to talk just a little bit about you first. Now, you're a small college guy. I mean, your history has been in small college. What I love about you, you've experienced really all the divisions. I mean, you've been at JC, you've been at NAIA, and now you're NCAA as well. So let's start with your JC experience. You were a player at ABAC, is that correct?
I was, yes. I played under Coach Red Hill at ABAC. I'm originally from Canada. Came down, my desire, like a lot of kids, is to play college tennis in the U.S. It was one of the few countries, actually the only country in the world, where you can kind of do your studies and play high-level tennis, and that's what excited me. I started late in my junior career. I wasn't, one of the top players in Canada. I was, just got more and more serious as I went on in my high school years. And JUCO at that time was thriving. I mean, there was 30 programs in Florida alone. At ABAC, they had just won the national title the year before I got there. That's what attracted me there. They had a good coach and a good program, and I started out there and had a great 2 years there, and then I transferred to Valdosta State, which was just down the road. Played for another great coach who's actually still there to this day, is John Hansen. He's won a few national titles in Division II, and really one of my mentors and good friends to this day, as well as
that's they're in our conference, and that's kind of our prime competition as well. So it's kind of bittersweet, as you'd say. And I came back into college tennis. I played after I graduated from Valdosta. I took a few years off, tried my hand in the business world, and kind of realized that I wanted to get back into something that I was really passionate about. And I went back to Valdosta to get my master's and was the assistant coach at Valdosta State. From there, I moved over in my first head coaching position to University of Mobile, which is in Mobile, Alabama, smaller private school, NAIA. And we had some very good teams at that time there. We actually won the national NAIA national title there with my men's team in 1997. So I was going back a ways. And then the job at West Florida opened up, and I've been over to Pensacola many times living in Mobile, and it was just one of the places that I really liked the community, liked the school, and it just was a great fit for me, and I moved over there, and I've been there ever since.
Derek, your pedigree into playing and coaching puts you into programs that have been very strong for small college tennis. I mean, I'm going to ask, did you design it this way, or did it kind of just fall in place for you as you went along?
Yeah, I guess it kind of just fell in place for me as I went along. I mean, these things are kind of hard to design. I just feel like I'm passionate about the sport, and I look at it every day. Even now, I look at it as something fun, and I'm just fortunate that I'm able to make enough to support myself and have fun doing it. It doesn't feel like I go to work any day. It seems like I'm just having a good time.
Well, now, I actually, I was a community college coach myself. Tyler Junior College is where I started, so we had a great rivalry with ABAC. I know Coach Hill. He was a legend in the game and in the junior college game, and also there at ABAC. But Tipton, Georgia, I mean, Derek, that's out there.
It is. It's a small place, but you know what? I can't knock it. I met my wife there, and that was one of the greatest things for me. So, I'm actually a small town person, though. I really enjoy small towns. I don't like to have to walk very far from where I park. I don't like to pay for my parking, and I don't like traffic. So I'm a small town type of person.
Yeah, to get the head coaching job there at Mobile. I mean, Mobile traditionally years ago was just a powerhouse in the NAIA level, and did they have that incredible tennis facility for you to participate at when you were there?
Yeah, they did. They have on the college campus. We had a very nice facility, and then the city of Mobile had a great facility. They've added courts since the days when I was there, but even when I was there, I think we had 36 at the facility in town, and now they've got over, I think it's 60 courts. So Scott Novak does a great job there running and bringing in events, and it's really a good tennis town, Mobile.
Yeah, and so left Mobile in 1999. You took the job there at West Florida. I want to talk about West Florida a little bit. You said 13,000 students. Why do the kids come to West Florida? What are the degrees? Why do they come there?
Well, when I started, it wasn't at 13,000. We're a state university, or we're in the state university system. So we're a state school, but we're one of the smaller state schools, probably the smallest state school. When I first started at UWF, I think we were around 6,000 or 7,000, kind of a gem in the, diamond in the rough. A lot of people don't know about us, but that's changing quickly. We've got a new president now who's really gung-ho on publicizing UWF and everything we have to offer. First off, we've got a great location, a great campus. Our campus has one of the largest land campus in Florida. We've got like 16,000 acres. It's a lot of wetlands and a lot of you know, I would say parklands, but sanctuary type lands where just, you know, we got hiking trails through there. We've got a little river on campus. You can check out canoes and kayaks and go down there. It's just a really nice place, and it's not your typical Florida, what you would think. There's hills. We've got a lot of hills on campus. For some of our hills, you can overlook the bay, see the water. So it's really a nice spot. And then we have all the benefits of the state university system, where all our credits are transferable with the other state university systems, where all the accreditations that go with the state university system and its programs. But yet we have a lot of these smaller classrooms and so forth that you would find in a smaller private school. A lot of, you know, my kids are always commenting how their classes are not much bigger than their high school classes. You know, they're 30 students to 40 students, and they know the teachers. The teachers, you know them by their name. And so it's got a lot of that, the pluses to that. You know what I mean? A lot of these schools, especially on the state schools in all of the states, really the bigger schools, you're going to get 200, 300 people in a lot of the classes, and we just don't have that there. So it's a little more personalized attention.
Now, as you've experienced this, were you always the men's and the women's coach when you got there, or is this something that was added to you?
Yeah, no, I've always, ever since I've been coaching, when I was the assistant at Valdosta, when I was the head coach at Mobile and at West Florida, I've done both programs, the men's and the women's, which on the Division I level is, you know, that's a dinosaur almost. It's not many people can do it just because of logistics and people doing, you know, different things. But on the smaller college, NAIA Division II level, it's fairly common. I would say probably 70% of the programs are run by the same coach with both teams. It's becoming a little more normal for them to split the programs and have two coaches, but as long as there's enough people doing both, it kind of works. It works well. You know, our schedules kind of mirror each other. We go to a school and we'll play. Like if we go to Valdosta, we'll play men and women on the same day, and a lot of times at the same time, which makes it a little bit tougher from a coach's standpoint. It's, you know, that much harder to be everywhere. But that's just one of the budgetary constraints with smaller colleges. Personally, I enjoy it. I like the balance of the two programs. I like the challenges that, you know, coaching the men and the challenges that coaching the women bring. You know, they're two different animals, same sport, but it's a little bit different coaching style when you approach both, and the athletes are a little bit different. So I like the balance.
Derek, I'm going to ask about your facility there. Do you have one on campus? Do you have indoor, outdoor courts? How is it set up for you?
We do. I said have a very nice facility on campus. We're right in the middle of campus. We've got 12 courts. They're post-tension courts that play very well. They're split up into, we've got three banks of four courts. And we're able to bring in a lot of teams. We host a lot of tournaments there. Division II teams that want to come down for spring break, NAIA teams. We host some Division I teams as well. But it's a good location where people can come down on spring break, get in, you know, two or three matches, maybe rent a condo at the beach type of thing and put their teams up there. So we have the facility, and like I said, it's right in the middle of campus, which is a great thing, but it's kind of turning out to be land that the school needs because we're growing so quickly. So the plans are now in the next few years, probably in the next 4 to 5 years, we'll be getting a new facility, which is over our – we have a sports complex, which is called our eSports complex, which is baseball, softball, soccer, and tennis will be going in there, and they'll be putting actually four dorms right – and a big quad area right in the middle and a new student center. It's like about a $100 million project they've got, and our courts sit kind of right in the middle of it. So once that gets underway, we'll be moving to a new facility, which I think will be good because the facility they promised is going to be a little nicer than the facility we have now. So I think it'll be great.
Outstanding. Now, You know, I looked at the schedule here, and from Pensacola, Florida, as you mentioned, that's got to be a hard place to kind of get people to come to, right?
Actually not. Because of our location, we get a lot of teams coming in there. We don't have a lot of teams around us, especially Division II teams, right, you know, within an hour, within a two-hour drive of us. But we're able to attract a lot of teams to come to Pensacola, like I say, for spring break and those kind of things. So, you know, home matches, I usually am pretty able, you know, pretty well able to balance my schedule with. I'm probably a little more heavy on the home matches than my away matches. So it's been good.
Yeah. Now, in Division II, and just to remind my listeners, Division II, you operate differently than Division I as far as the number of hours, days that you can practice. Your fall practice and season is basically, what, about 6 weeks? Is that right?
Yeah, they've changed over. We used to mirror the Division I practice and playing schedules fairly closely, and Division II has moved to it's something called Life in Balance, and what their goal behind that is to give the student athletes a little more of the college experience than they would get if they were just playing tennis, you know, every day they were at school. So we have our fall season is broken up into a 45-day window, and within that 45-day window, all our competitions and our team practices have to fall. Now, outside of that 45-day window, we can still do individual workouts and still do fitness, and they can do, of course, voluntary workouts, which most of the top teams, you know, you're bringing in players that are serious tennis players, so they're going to get out and play sets and do all that on their own as well. But it just gives them a little more balance. So our season, typically, we will start our 45-day period about 3 weeks after school gets in, so that'll give the students a little bit of a chance to get adjusted, to get the class schedule going, and get going that way. And then our season will run almost to about a week or two before Thanksgiving. So it's still a pretty long season, the 45 days. We cram a lot into that. And then, you know, outside of the 45 days, of course, we're still doing fitness and individual workouts and a time to really build on their game during that time. So I think it's a good balance.
Now, your fall schedule, as it's listed on the internet here, is just a couple tournaments. Do you play other events besides your regional and the small college championship?
We do. We do a lot of stuff. We have like a futures in town that a lot of my guys participate in, and there's actually another futures just down the road that a lot of the guys participate in. So they've got a lot of opportunities to play other tournaments. We also do a lot of in-house tournaments, you know, amongst our team. But we don't play – we try not to use more than three dates in our fall season. You're only allowed 25 dates in the whole year. So we'll use typically three in the fall season, and then we'll save, you know, our 22 dates for our spring matches. The fall season ends up to be pretty full. It doesn't look that full when you look at the schedule, but they stay pretty active.
Right. Now, are you able to host according to this, you hosted the ITA, the South Regional, at your home place. That's got to be a strong advantage for your team.
Yeah, we have hosted that in the past. We just did it this past year, and it seems to come around about every 3 or 4 years where we get to host it. It is nice. You don't have to travel. But at the same time, sometimes it's easier in those tournaments when you're traveling, to be honest. A little easier. You get all your players in the hotel. You all go to the courts at the same time. Because the way the fall tournaments work, they're individual tournaments. Those the ITA regionals are individual. You've got players playing at all different times, and when we're home, you got your players showing up at different times. You know, you're not all coming together. When you're on the road, most of the time you're getting up at the hotel in the morning. You're all eating breakfast together, and you're all going to the courts together. So it makes it a little easier, I think, sometimes logistically running your team and stuff on that on those tournaments when it is away. But at the same time, it is nice for the kids to be able to sleep in their own bed and to be able to have it at home. It definitely is nice every few years.
Right. Now, you were fortunate enough to qualify for the National Small College Championship. That is, I think that's the greatest event in college tennis. How about yourself?
Yeah, no, I think it's great. It's one event where you can really go all the way. If you can win that, you get into the Division One tournament. It's great. We've got representation from all divisions, all the way up. And I was, we were fortunate to have the best player in the nation this year in Bruno Savi on my men's team, and he went undefeated all year. Started out in the fall, won that tournament, and lost in the finals of the Super Bowl to Kip from Ember Riddle, very good player. But we were just a great experience for him and for me as a coach as well.
Yeah, well, Derek, let me ask you, and we're small college people here. I mean, does an event like this, does it strengthen your position as a small college coach in the recruiting of your athletes or your players to hype up an event like this?
Yeah, I think anytime you do well, it helps in your recruiting. Kids are now with the internet, and just everybody's more knowledgeable of what's going on. When something happens, it's on Facebook, and I know something. We won the Nationals this year. It's like everybody knew about it, instantly through Facebook, and it was shared all over the world, and everybody seemed to be seeing videos of it and all that stuff, which in the past, never happened. I know we won it in 04 and 05, and it was kind of, unless you told somebody, they really didn't know. Now it seems like everybody knows, and I think that really helps in the recruiting. So, yeah, all the technology, all the things like that really help spread the word, and these tournaments are great. The better you do, the more kids hear about it.
So, Derek, as the fall season closes, November gets there, you're into Thanksgiving. I mean, do you look across your guys' team and say, you know what, we've got a pretty good group of guys here. We might have something we can build on here?
Yeah, I mean, we knew going into this season we were going to be one of the top teams. The last 2 years prior to that, we were so close. We lost in the finals to a great team, Armstrong Atlantic, 2 years ago. They had a very strong team, and we lost in the finals to them. The next year, we had another good team. We lost in the semifinals to them in a very close match. So the guys were hungry. We had been really close 2 years prior to that, and we added a couple new guys in the fall. So, the guys were very confident, and that was kind of our goal from the onset of the season. The guys weren't going to be happy unless, we went all the way, because we had been close those other 2 years, and it just left a kind of a bad taste in our mouth, and we wanted to go one step further. And so that was kind of our goal, and that's kind of what you have to do if you're gonna win it. I think you gotta kind of shoot for that right from the onset.
Yeah, and I guess in looking at this schedule, that was the goal. I mean, and you didn't get to play the match, but starting February 1st, there, 2014, you wanted to really go after somebody pretty important, and you're gonna play Armstrong right out of the gate. I mean, was that just a challenge match that was set up for you and your guys to say, let's see where we're at and where we're going?
Yeah, I mean, a match like that, ideally, neither one of us wanted it as our first match of the season, but it just the way it worked out. We're in different regions, and we were fairly far apart geographically, so we usually meet in the middle, and the only weekend we really had kind of open to both meet was that weekend, and we both kind of looked at it the same. Me and Simon Earnshaw, the coach, said, we just said, we might as well just get it out on the table right now and play the match. It'll be good for the guys. Win or lose, it's going to be a good match. And unfortunately, you know, we were up in that match and we got rained out. We'd won all three doubles and we got rained out in between doubles and singles. We couldn't continue and we ended up having to play them in the semifinals of the national tournament again. So we did get to play the match and, you know, after losing to them the two previous years, that was a really important match for us.
Yeah, Derek, are you one of these coaches that brings your kids in early to practice before the start of the spring semester, or have you pretty much started mid-January and practiced as hard as you can to that February 1st date?
Yeah, in Division II, you're not allowed to practice before the first day of classes, either for the spring season, but we never have in the past. We usually don't start even that first week. And we usually start classes. They'll usually start for us on a Tuesday or Wednesday, coming back. I usually give them that first week to kind of relax and get their schedule, and they'll come out and hit some balls on their own, and then we'll start that second week. One of the other luxuries we have kind of in Division II is everyone's on the same page with when we can start. And in Division II, you can't start any matches before February 1st, but the earliest you can play a match. So it kind of gives us that 3 weeks prior to any competition to get in practice. And like I said, that's a rarity to start out a match with a match like Armstrong. We usually try and start out with a few other matches, maybe out-of-division matches. We play a lot of good NAIA schools or junior colleges or Division I opponents where we can try to get our feet wet first with a few matches before we go into the meat of our Division II schedule.
Well, Derek, when you check out this spring schedule, I mean, there are a lot of number signs here with numbers beside them. I mean, you guys played a lot of ranked teams in your march towards this national championship.
Yeah, I think we play one of the top schedules in Division II. We try and play as many top teams as we can. We're really fortunate. It's kind of a double-edged sword. We're fortunate that we're in a region that's very tough. We have, out of the top 10 teams in the country, we've got, you know, seven of them right in our region, which is a great thing when we go to schedule, because we don't have to travel a whole lot to play those teams. But at the same time, the way Division II is set up, you have to advance regionally, and they don't move teams out of region. So you can be number three in the nation. If you're three in the region, you know, and that's where you finish, you're not going to go to the final 16. So that's kind of a drawback to the regional system. But the good thing is we're in a good region, so we have a lot of competition during the year without going too far to find it.
Now you start off on you and your guys. I mean, this you start off. You go 5-0. And, your toughest one up to that was Lander at 7-2. And then you run into Xavier in the end of February. You go 6-3 with them. Pretty good match on that day?
Yeah, they've got a good team. They're a good NAIA program team. I can't remember exactly if I think I had one guy out maybe, but they had a very solid team. Of those NAIA schools, the top, you know, the top 10 in NAIA are very good, and they're, you know, very comparable with any of the top 10 teams in Division II. So, you know, a lot of people haven't heard of NAIA. They don't know that division, but there's a lot of good teams out there in that division. So we know that, and I know that from coaching that in that division. So, I never try to take them lightly, that's for sure. But they have a good program. Lander had a very good program. Yeah, we played a lot of good teams and had a lot of, you know, closer matches than what the scores portrayed in some of them as well.
Now, we were able to visit with Chase Hodges there, the Georgia Gwinnett team. He's come on really quickly in the NAIA division, and I mean, just like you, a small college guy, always enthused to see these new colleges and universities get strong tennis programs. It's going to be a help for you down there as well, I'd imagine.
Yeah, we're actually going to play them this year. He's done a great job there, and I know their school is
is, you know, very pro athletic. They only have a few teams, so they, you know, they put a lot of resources into their tennis, and I know they're very serious. He's in a great location too in Atlanta, and he's done a great job really starting that program and getting it to the top right away. So he's done a tremendous job.
Derek, I've got to ask, did spring break at West Florida, was it around the March 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th time frame there this year?
This year, is that's one word. Like, are you talking about this coming season?
No, the reason I ask is when I look at your schedule, no, this year, when you had a period there where you traveled to Tampa, Florida, Boca Raton, and Miami.
Correct. That
in that period of time, you went.
That's our spring break trip.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I asked, because in looking at your schedule, this is the toughest part of your year right here in the dual match season. I'm not trying to take anything away from the playoffs, but when you look at your schedule, this 3 to 4 day period here, and that's why I asked, was it around the spring break season? When you played St. Leo, Lynn and Barry, those had to have been some really tough matches for you.
Oh yeah, those are our toughest and most important matches of our season every year, because, like I had explained about the regionalization, those are all in region, they're all in our region, and if we do well on those, it sets us up for the NCAA regionals at the end of the year, our seedings and our pairings. So by us going down, and we try and do that every other year, we'll go down on our spring break trip, play all those teams, and then the following year we'll meet them. They'll either come to our place and play, or we'll meet them at a neutral location and play them. But those are very important matches in our division, and we were fortunate this year to go down and win all those matches on the men's side, and that put us as the number one team in the region, which gave us an easier road to the final 16 site than had we finished number two or number three. It's, you know, number one, we got to play our regional at home, our spring regional at home, which was a huge advantage. And number two, we got to play the fourth-ranked team rather than playing the number two or number three team, which happened to be Barry and Lynn this year.
Yeah.
So it's really important those nights.
Right, the Lynn match goes 5-4. That point wise was your toughest match of the year, 5-4.
Yeah, it was a tough match. It was we always have a battle with Lynn. They've got a good, well coached team, and they always fight hard. They always, you know, we have a good rivalry with them, and they always fight hard when they play us. That match we were down at number one. That was the match. Bruno Savi was down in that match. I think he was down 5-2 in the first set, came back and won that. I think he was 7-5 or 7-6, and that kind of turned that match. And then at number five was another match. We were up, and we had match points, and my guy started cramping. So it could have been a 6-3, or it could have been a 5-4 for Lynn. So it could have, you know, it could have won either way. But they're always a tough match for us.
Yeah. You get out of there, you get through your spring break, and Coach, man, what a heck of a spring break. You got to spend it traveling through Florida. That's some great scheduling.
Yeah, I mean, the guys, actually, a lot of our guys, we go either to California 1 year or to Florida the next year. This year we're going back out to San Diego this coming year, and that was our year to be down to Florida, try and head down to Miami and you know, just spend it that way. So it's always good. And I mean, the guys would sometimes like to have that off, but it's just too important of a time with no classes. And I like to play our toughest matches then, because the guys can really focus on tennis and not have to worry about trying to schedule, you know, to balance their academics at the same time we're playing tough matches. So it's nice to play those tougher matches on your spring break when you're just fully focused on tennis.
All right, now, Coach, you play in the Gulf South Conference, And help me understand this, because I see that you play a Gulf South Conference tennis a tournament here. In your matches, in your dual matches through the course of your spring season, are you trying to get seeded into the tournament, or is there what is the goal of the dual matches playing in the conference for the tournament?
Correct. Yeah, those dual matches, they're basically two important things with those dual matches. Number one, they're all regional opponents, so they all count in our NCAA regional rankings as well. And then they all count for seedings for our Gulf South Conference tournament. So this year we were undefeated in the Gulf South Conference, which put us as the number one seed. Again, that gave us the advantage that in the semifinals we played the number four seed, and the 2 and 3 at the playoff, which was Valdosta and West Alabama, and then we played the winner of that in the finals of the Gulf South Conference. But I like it. It makes it a nice balance. We play each of those teams in the Gulf South. We play home and away on an alternating year basis. So we usually have four teams at home 1 year and four teams on the road out of our Gulf South Conference matches. So it makes it a nice balance. And then we have a good tournament at the end of the year. It's always, you know, the Gulf South is a tough conference. We played Valdosta State. The 1 year we lost to them actually in the conference tournament, and ended up beating them in the finals of the national tournament. So we used to have a Wachita Baptist in the Gulf South too, and Wachita was at one time, us and Valdosta and Wachita were the top three or four teams in the nation, all in the same conference. So it's typically a very strong conference.
Yeah, Coach, your last eight matches, this is great schedule, and you finish up at home, Pensacola, Florida, playing from March 18th to April 12th. You didn't have to leave home base.
Yeah, and that's usually the way I try and set it up. I usually host a lot of teams in the last weekend in March and the first weekend in April. Those are my two kind of home weekends where I try and bring in a lot of teams. I used to do a really big tournament the first weekend in April every year, and it just kind of dwindled down. But I used to have 12 teams in, and they were all top 20 Division II teams. It was, for a lot of years there, it was a tougher field than the Final 16 side at the national tournament. And I did that tournament for many years, and it just got to be too much logistically running it. So now I try and do it a little bit smaller. I'll bring in 3 to 4 teams each of those weekends, and we'll each play three matches on the weekend. So, but I try and stay home from the end of March until the conference. Do my traveling the during spring break and the later weekends of February.
And Coach, I looked it up. Your winning percentage for your men through these 16 seasons, 81%. This year going into the Gulf South Conference tournament and that South Regional, you're undefeated. You got to be feeling pretty good making it through the regular season undefeated, right, Coach?
Oh, yeah, that was huge. I mean, it's a lot of matches, and it's tough to have your guys up for every match. But we were fortunate. One of the stats that I was looking at early in the year, I don't think it's ever happened. Never happened to my teams. Even, you know, we won it in 04 and 05 with very good teams. But at one point in the year, we were undefeated. And this was right at the end of the year. We were undefeated at number one singles, undefeated at number two singles, undefeated at number three singles. And we had lost one match at number four. So my top four guys had lost one match in total. And that was at the end. That was at the end of the regular season. So that just is an impossible thing. That I don't know how that happened, but we just had some matches, and they weren't all blowout matches. They were all some good matches, and we somehow those guys just were able to win. I had a really good freshman who played number 2 and 3 that just stepped up and played great all year.
Coach, now you load up the van from Pensacola, and you got to drive to Altamonte Springs, Florida. How far is that drive for you?
It's actually a pretty easy drive. It's about a 7 hour, 6.5, 7 hours.
But again, it's one of the we're used to going there. It's in Orlando. That's usually where we play. It's right around Rollins College, and we usually play there in our on our spring break. We don't play at that park usually, but we play right there in Altamont Springs, and we stay in Altamont Springs and play in Winter Park. And actually, the years we won it in 04 and 05 was at that same venue at San Lando Park. So I really like that place. I think it's a it fits well for us. The weather is what we're used to, which is an advantage for us and some of the southern Florida teams, I think, being used to that humidity in May. And we were able to bring a lot of fans because it's only a short drive. We had a really good following there. We were able, you know, we had probably 16 of our players there, and our president was there, our vice presidents, our athletic director. We had probably 40 people there at every match, if not more. I think some matches went at 50, 60 people there cheering us on, which really helped.
Derek, you get out to your national championship. There are 16 teams there. Help me understand this. Do you kind of reseed everyone once you get out there, or how is the draw set up as you get out to the Division II championships?
Well, it's kind of a strange thing from a tennis perspective. We just don't understand it, but it's an NCAA thing. It's the way they do it. There is no seeding in that draw. It's they take basically every region and they draw them out of a hat, and that's how the draw is made. It's probably the only tennis tournament in the world that's unseeded. But this year we were fortunate. I think the draw came out very fair. If we were to seed the draw, I think it would have came out the same. It ended up, you know, us and Hawaii Pacific, who were the two undefeated teams, the one and two teams in the country, were on opposite sides of the draw. And Barry, who would have been the number three team, ended up playing the number two team in the semis. And we played Armstrong, who was the number four team in the semis. So it was a very fair draw that way. It could have turned out we could have actually had to play a wide Pacific second round. And that would have just been the way it drew out. So it's kind of, from a tennis standpoint, the coaches don't understand it. The players don't understand why it's not seeded. But that's just the way it's done. And I don't think that's going to change any time in the foreseeable future. But that's one of the D2 philosophies, is that you play in your region and you shouldn't be rewarded or penalized if you can't travel out of your region. So that's why they don't seed it. They're like, okay, if a team can only play in their region, they should have the same advantages as a team that can travel the whole country and play everyone. It's kind of a financial commitment that D2 has. They, you know, they say, okay, this is our philosophy. You need to commit to play regionally. And if you can afford to play nationally, that's great, but you shouldn't get an advantage because you can afford to. So that's kind of a little bit different philosophy than the D1 athletics.
So you mentioned, and I love this fact, that as you get to May 17th, National Championship Day, it does come down to two undefeated teams, you and Hawaii Pacific. Is this where you expected yourself to be as you went through the season, Derek, or is it an oh my gosh surprise type moment?
Well, I mean, looking at it, you know, we know most of the teams. I knew looking on paper, Hawaii Pacific had a great team, and they had a great team off of paper too. They were just a very good team. I mean, their number, just the depth on their team is unbelievable. Their number three player, for instance, had a win in a futures tournament over Stefan Kuchlov, who's, you know, just was in the finals of Wimbledon Juniors, one of the top juniors in the world. And this guy's playing number three, and he's beating those kind of players. And all the way down, you know, their number one player was number two in the nation. Their number two player was my number one player's only loss last year. Bruno Savi's only loss was to this guy that played number two for them. So they had a strong team, and we knew it on paper that it was gonna be a battle. Armstrong and Barry, the two other semifinalists, you know, both very strong teams that were capable of winning it all as well. So it, you know, it, it was something that we had thought might happen, but not something that we took for granted by any means.
Well, now, you guys play on a 9-point system here. Everything counts. You play 8-game pro sets for the doubles, two out of three sets for the singles. You start off with the doubles, Coach, and this looks like some pretty heated competition.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic because their doubles had been so strong all year, and our doubles had been had been kind of our weakest point in our season. You know, we'd been going up 2-1 or down 2-1 against a lot of the better teams, but very seldom up 3-0. And Hawaii Pacific, I don't think, had ever been down 3-0 all year, and they were – you know, they were going up 3-0 on everybody. You know, going into it, I just wanted to win for sure one of the doubles. I was hoping we would get two, and somehow everything went right for us that day, and we got all three. You know, that had never happened against a good team all year, and it was just from that point, I had a great feeling about it. We still had to fight like crazy, and still Hawaii Pacific almost came back and beat us. Even going up 3-0, but it is a tough battle when you go down 3-0. It's almost an impossibility to come back. I'm not a huge proponent of the 3 points. I kind of like the Division I scoring format with the 1 point. But obviously on that day, I really enjoyed the 3 points.
I would imagine so, Coach. Now, let me ask you about those doubles matches. Were they all when you're coaching these, and you've got an assistant coach, and you've got three courts going on at once? Are they all moving along at the same pace? Could you kind of get a feel for the ebb and flow of what was happening?
Yeah, I mean, at number one, we started out pretty quickly, really took control of number one right away. I had a good feeling on that. We were up a break early. At number two, we got up a break, and we kept losing the break back. And at number three, at one point we were up comfortably, not comfortably, but up, you know, in all three doubles, number 6-3 at number three, and I think 6-3 at two, and maybe 6-3 or 7, maybe 7-4 at one, or 7-5 at one. So at one point it looked like, and then it started to slide. You know, we won number one, but then two became very close, and three we actually lost our break and got down at three, ended up holding on at number two, and then at number three we had to come back and take it into a tiebreaker. We're actually down a match point at number three, and should have lost it. That guy, he missed a kind of poached across and missed a ball that he should have made. Just hit the top of the net on a poach, which would have been a winner for the match. Would have made it 2-1 in a totally different match. But somehow it caught the tape and fell on his side, and we came back and won that in the breaker. So that was a big momentum change right there. That 1 point really had a huge impact on the whole match.
Now, Derek, you end up 3-0 ahead after the doubles. You know, take us through this. Do you get a 10-minute break here? Or how does it happen before you get those six singles matches on there at the Division II National Championship?
Yeah, you get a 10-minute break between singles and doubles. And, you know, after the doubles, we just kept telling ourselves, hey, this match isn't over. These guys are going to fight. They're going to fight hard. They're good at every position. And we had actually had a really tough match the day before against Armstrong. Three of my guys were cramping, and we had to, you know, I'm a big proponent. I think pickle juice works really well. So I had all the guys drinking pickle juice, and that was one of the things we were doing between the doubles and singles on that final day. We had nobody cramping or feeling like they were going to cramp, but I was making them drink pickle juice and Gatorade and Pedialyte and just everything we could to try and make them feel confident that they weren't going to cramp and that they were going to be good. But you know, Armstrong took a lot out of us the day before, and, you know, we had some ice baths that night and some pickle juice and some Pedialyte and all that, and I think I was really surprised that we were able to fight back that day and keep our legs. But, you know, going into the singles and just in the singles, it was just tooth and nail the whole way, all the way down. We got a big win from our number one player, Bruno, again, came through and you know, put us up in the single. And then from then, every match was tight, and we ended up scraping out another one.
Yeah, it got really tight, I guess, after your number one player put you ahead 4-0, you know, then you start to lose a little bit of ground. Hawaii Pacific is able to mount some wins here and get on the board. I guess for a little while you're biting your nails just a little bit, Coach?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they came out quickly and played well at number five. My number five guy had been playing very good the whole tournament, played great the day before, and he was one of the ones that didn't cramp and felt good, and the guy at Hawaii Pacific just played just drummed him that match. It was just one of those matches where everything went his way, and they won easily at five. At number three was, you know, my freshman from France, and their French player, both top players, and their guy was just a little too tough. And we had our chances. We were up, I think in the second set, we were up 5-2 or 5-3, and he came back and ended up beating us in a tiebreaker in that match. So right away, that put it at 4-2 with three matches. They won at number four, which is on, and we were at number two. We were down a set and not looking real good in the second. We were, I think it was, you know, on serve type of thing. At number six, we were actually up, and I thought we were going to clinch it at number six. We were up a set. We won the first set 7-5, and we went up 3-0. And I thought, okay, this is where we're going to win it. And next thing I knew, it's 3-3. Then at number two, somehow we fought back and won that second set and took it to a third set. Then at number six, kept going back and forth. Then we went up, I think at 3-3, we went up to 5-3, had chances, and the next thing I knew, we were down, or we were back to 5-5. So it just was one of those things. It was just back and forth. But at number two, Tony Regibolino, our French guy, ended up coming through and clinching a huge match. I think the final set was 6-3, but it was just a battle in the third set there.
Coach Racine, was there a match, and when you look back on those nine matches of that day, was there a particular match or a particular moment that stood out in which you said, you know what, we're going to have a very good day today?
Well, yeah, I think once we got two of the doubles, I knew we were, you know, going to be in the driver's seat. And when we ended up, you know, getting that third double, when they, you know, when they had the match point and didn't close it, and then we ended up coming right back and closing it, I think the tiebreaker score was maybe 10-8 in the breaker, maybe 9-7. It was a very tight back and forth breaker. And when we clinched that one at number three doubles, I was pretty confident then that we were going to take it. Like I say, it's just almost an impossibility to come back from 3-0. It's been done many times, but when you get two teams that are that close in ability, it's just really hard to win five of the singles. I think we would have scraped out number six. We were up 30-love at the end, so I think we would have got it had we lost that number three double. But it sure gave us a lot more confidence going into singles, you know, being up 3-0. And I think it took a lot of wind out of their sails as well.
Well, Coach, this was your third national championship for the men. It had been a while. First time since 2005. That's quite a drought for West Florida.
Yeah, and like I say, we've been close many times, but, you know, in order to win it, you've really got to I mean, it's not an easy feat. It's you've got to have everything go your way during the year with injuries, with just with matches, and then you have to have everything go your way for that week. So it's really a tough thing to do. And you know, we've been very close. We just weren't able to quite get there. I'm very fortunate. There's only a few programs, a handful of programs in Division One, in Division Two, in Division Three, and really every division that can kind of win these things. It seems like, there's maybe five or six teams over I don't know how many years that are able to win one. I feel pretty fortunate that we were able to come back and get back on top. Like I say, the last 3 years we were one of the top five programs in the country, but not able to come through and get that win. So, I'm fortunate that we got it. We could have just as easily not won this year. There was enough other good teams that had something not gone our way, a cup point here or there. As dominant as we were being undefeated, we could have not made it. So it was one of those things where I'm kind of, putting on a sigh of relief that we did win, but at the same time, we're ecstatic that we did because, it's just not an easy feat.
Well, Derek, I got to ask, does the Division II National Coach of the Year, does he get a Gatorade bath at the end of this match?
Yeah, they kind of got me a little bit. I'm still a little bit quicker than that. I got out of it 90% out of the way, but they got me a little bit. So my son actually tried to trick me with my phone. So he kind of had the phone get me to look up something on his phone, and then I knew something was kind of up. When my son asked me for phone advice, I know that something's weird.
Derek, is there what are the chances for a repeat next year? I mean, we as college coaches, we win these things, we get to enjoy them for 10 minutes, and then our brain shifts to, well, we've got to get ready for next year. So I know you've been thinking about it. Well, what are your chances for repeating next year?
Yeah, I mean, we lost a couple very key guys. We lost our, Bruno Savi, our number one player. We lost Tony Reggiolino, our number two player. Felipe Fortini, our number five player, but fortunately we're able to bring in some new players. I've got some new guys coming in that I feel real confident they're able to step in and perform. And then the other thing I really feel good about is that we're able to obtain Bruno and Felipe as coaches. They're going to help me out. They've got a little bit more schooling to do, so we're going to help them graduate, and they're going to help the team on the coaching side, which I think is going to be really important, because when you get those guys that have won it and know what it's like, and they're helping out the team, and then you've got the guys that are coming back that have won it, it really helps the new guys that come in instantly have that belief that they can do it too. So, I think we're going to be in good shape, but at the same time, I know there's going to be five or six other programs out there that are going to be just as good or better than us. So it's going to be a tough thing, but I think we're going to be up for the challenge.
Derek, I've got one more question, then I'm going to get you out of here today. And I had Coach Kegel on from Barry on the women's side after he had won. And it's got to kind of be a weird moment for you guys. You lost one of your brothers in battle here at the end of the year. Simon, and I've had Simon on the show before, Earnshaw. He's decided to leave Armstrong and move on to North Carolina State. What do you think about that situation there at Armstrong? Are they going to find someone to replace Simon's efforts there, or what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I mean, Armstrong's very committed to athletics and to tennis, so I think they'll find somebody. Armstrong, is a great place, a great school. Simon did a great job there. Simon was at basically started at Armstrong about the same years that I started at West Florida. So we've got a good rivalry between the two schools. We try and play each year, and it's always a friendly rivalry. Me and Simon get along very well, and we've got some funny stories of matches
I don't know if Simon's listening, but it's the shoe story, and he is kind of one of our famous ones. And it was funny because it was in one of our matches, and Simon got upset and kicked the tennis ball, and his shoe flew off and went into the court of another. And it was during the national tournament, so it was kind of a funny. Went into one of the other courts, and we were playing the semifinals this year, and he showed me his phone, and he got a text. We didn't know who it was from, but it was an anonymous text, and it was just like, "Don't forget to tie your shoes this tournament," or something. So it was kind of funny, but we've got a good rivalry and a good friendly rivalry, and I have no doubt Simon's going to do very well at the Division I level, and he'll do great there. You know, I wish he was back coaching at Armstrong, but I'm sure they'll get somebody in that is just as passionate as Simon was, and things will go on there. I expect them to be in the tops of the rankings for years to come. We'll definitely miss Simon, both sides of the men's and the women's. He's had some unbelievable programs and just a good guy to compete against. Always fair, and he's going to do his best to beat you. But at the same time, his teams are going to play fair, and he's going to play fair. So, I think he'll do very well in the Division I side. And I've been talking to him a few times since he left, and wish him good luck.
Derek, I got to ask one. I said one last thing, but this is really it. I mean, was it a shock to you about the BYU Hawaii situation, where they're going to drop the all their athletics? I mean, that's a hard couple of schools to lose traditionally in the small college world.
It is. It's I never like to see anyone drop in athletics, and especially a top program like that where they've been so well, but. I understand kind of the struggle that they go through. I know just looking at their schedule, looking at Hawaii Pacific's schedule and some of those schools in Hawaii, it's just so tough for them to get teams to come over there. I mean, we've wanted for years to go over to play there, and it's just so expensive that we can't afford it. And yet their only option is to come over. So I know when you're dealing with, not just one sport, but all the sports, it's got to be astronomical, the cost for them to carry on the athletic department and to be competitive. I mean, I think they could keep their athletics, but I don't think they would be happy being a mediocre team. And I think that's kind of where their decision deciding factor in that decision was that, hey, if we can't be competitive like we've been in all our sports, why are we going to keep going? And, maybe that's what they decided, but it's going to be sad to see them go, especially on the tennis side. On the women's side, they've been, probably one of the all-time greats in Division II tennis. I know they've got records that I don't know if anyone will ever surpass. And Dave Porter is, a good friend of mine and a great coach, and I hate to see it for him. I know I don't know what his plans are, if he's going to retire or what, but just a first-class guy and did a tremendous job there and a good friend of mine.
Now, Derek, I noticed that you run a few Nike camps during the summer. Are you done with those? Do you have anything else going on for the summer?
Yeah, I was trying to, I do the Nike camp, and that's been great for me. I'm really fortunate to be able to work with Nike. We get good numbers for that, and it's something I really enjoy. I usually go off campus, run a couple camps, and I try and do all that in June. July is kind of my vacation time where I'm originally from Canada, so I like to go up and spend a few weeks up there, do a little recruiting, and then, August it's back to the grind. Starting the 1st of August, we have meetings, we have, seminars we have to go to and that. So we really start back, even though the students aren't back till about the 20th of August, we start back pretty much in full swing, getting everything going the first part of August. So July is kind of my downtime, but at the same time, I've spent the last few days on the phone quite a bit with different coaches and trying to set out scheduling and set out different logistics of the trip. So even though we get to travel a little bit, take a little time off, we're always doing emails, phone calls, and text messages, and it seems nonstop throughout the summer, but it is good to have that little bit of downtime and recharge your battery.
Well, Derek, well, I want to thank you for coming in and sharing your story today. 29 or maybe it was 30 and 0, or 29 and 0 on the season. We finished ranked to number one, rightfully so, national champion, national coach of the year. A great 2014 season. I wish you the best in 2015 and look forward to visiting with you again sometime soon.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed being on the show, and I appreciate all you do for college tennis. It's great just to get the word out there and get these kids fired up and looking to play college tennis because, you know, we're the only country in the world that has this to offer, and it's just an amazing thing. And I'm glad to see someone like yourself promoting it and getting the word out there. Thank you.
Yeah, we're going to have you back on to talk again soon, Derek. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you so much.
Well, have a great day.
Bye-bye. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Coach Derek Racine. Derek is the coach there, like we said, University of West Florida, both the men and the women. Traditionally one of the top programs in the NCAA tennis world, whether you be Division I, Division II, Division III. Derek has a fine pedigree in coaching at successful programs in the small college world. He attracts good players. He teaches them how to be successful students, be successful athletes, and it's reflected in the winning percentage. It's reflected in the national championships that he's attained there as a team, and also the All-Americans, academic, and others that he's inspired there while at the University of West Florida. And, you know, just so excited that we got to spend some time with him today, and looking forward to having him back on in the future so we can just talk some regular tennis. And want to let you know that next week, on the show, we've got Coach Peter Smith. You remember Coach Smith? He's from USC. He's the men's coach. The Trojans had another successful year. So we're going to bring him in and visit with him about some things that went on out there. So make sure you tune in and listen the next Wednesday. And if you want to catch some of our other shows, check out Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces Monday. And also Coach Chuck Creasy's Wednesday's show, American Tennis with Chuck Creasy. They do a wonderful job of bringing some great personalities to the air. So just want to thank you for listening in today. Always try to find us out there. We are the UR Tennis Network. 1,100 hours of interviews and years of chasing down the next guest, and we're going to keep going. So look for us next week. Thanks so much. Go hit some tennis balls. Bye-bye.